My wife calls me Michael.
Oh, then I will certainly not.
My mother used to call me Michael when she was really upset with me, but I prefer Mike.
Okay.
So I'm Mike Schmer. I'm the chairman of the Oak Lodge History Detectives. I'm on the Concord Task Force, the Clackamas County Heritage Council member, and I've been the chairman of the History Detectives for 10 years plus now. And so, and now I'm stuck on the Historic Review Board. Howard, how about you? Introduce yourself.
Well, I'm Howard Post. I live here in Mullalla. I was on the HRB, the city HRB, for 6 years, was in the Kanema for 20 years, and we're still getting into all this stuff we're trying to do. That's it.
You're on the Mullalla Historic Review Board?
No, I was the Oregon City Historic Review Board.
Oh, okay.
I was there for what, 6 years, 2 terms as chair because nobody else wanted it.
That's how it works.
Right. No, right on, right on. So we're all trying to do the right thing. So, you know.
And Megan.
Hey, I'm Megan Burt. I live in Stafford in a historic home, our fourth historic home. I have no credibility here other than I'm a history teacher and an interested person who has gone through the process of visiting with the Historic Review Board for my own project. So that's why I'm here.
And Martha.
Martha Waldemar, and I have been on the Historic Review Board for almost 2 terms, and I was on several years ago, I was on the Design Review Board for over 2 terms, and then they kicked us off if we were had more than 8 years. So, anyway, that is it.
And I see two phone numbers that I don't have a clue who they are, so.
One will be me, right?
And
Right.
you are?
My name is Nang. I'm with Mildren Design Group.
Okay.
And the 4019 number is Teresa Long with AAI Engineering. I'm the landscape architect.
Good, good. Welcome. And Tuan
The three
Lu.
seven
Go ahead.
Tuan Lu.
the 3734 number is Beth Zahner with AAI. I'm a land use planner.
Okay.
Yeah, and I'm Tuan. I'm with Mildren Design Group as well. We're the architects.
And Beth.
Sorry, that I just introduced myself. So I'm
Oh.
on twice, so I can see you, and I also
You're
have a
on
phone. So.
twice. I think
I
that's
am.
illegal. I think that
Okay.
is a
Beth and Nang
violation of
are
our
on twice, and
policies.
so is Teresa.
Yeah.
Who am I missing, Anthony?
I think that is who we've got on so far. I believe is there anybody who hasn't gone? I
I
will
think
just
that's
suffice it to say
everybody.
that I'm Anthony, the one of the planners here at the Clackamas County, and I'm the planner assigned to this and most historic applications.
And I think somebody should read the minutes from the last meeting. Ha ha ha. Well, just for the rest, everybody else, even though our bylaws say that there will be minutes, we just record the sessions, correct, Anthony?
Correct. And actually, I'm glad you mentioned that just so you're all aware. The meeting is recorded. We're recording audio only, so what will be posted will be audio only. So don't, feel any kind of way about being on camera or having like video images of you out in the world. They're audio only recordings, and they're just to kind of keep track of what was said and kind of the keep a record.
So I don't see anybody else joining, so Anthony, you may as well launch right into it.
All right. Sounds good. Let me get my screen shared here. I'm hoping everyone's seeing that all right.
Yep.
Great. All right. So what we're discussing and looking at today is a program of new construction on one of Clackamas County's historic landmark sites. The historic structure on the house is called the Haverlock House. I'll give a little bit more background on that in a future slide. So this slide right here. So the property in our inventory is known as the Haverlock House and Silver Thread Kraut and Pickle Works. It was originally designated in the early 1990s. As many of our board members and as many of the project team will recall, the Silver Thread Kraut and Pickle Works, the barn, which is currently a feed store on the lot, was the subject of a previous historic review board meeting. At that meeting, the board voted for a 60-day stay of demolition, which is kind of the maximum length allowed under our ordinance. Those 60 days were up in mid-December, and subsequently the applicant submitted the necessary documentation materials to be in a position to move forward with demolition. So just want to give that background, but although most of you are aware of it, we would cover our bases. Quick word on the location. We're looking at the southeast corner of Highway 212 and Southeast 130th Avenue. The proposal is for the construction of three buildings. Building one is along Highway 212, about just over 12,000 square feet. Building two is internal to the site, about 16,700 square feet. Building three is along Southeast 130th, about 6,500 square feet. So those are the three buildings being proposed, along with new parking and circulation for the site, as well as new landscaping. And these buildings kind of form an L shape around the existing historic, the remaining historic building on the site, the Haverlock House. So that is that remaining structure is the one shown here with the hash marking around. This building up here, which steps along to it, is building one. Back here, building two, and then building three over here along Southeast 130th. So to kind of focus our discussion tonight, I wanted to just touch on the four relevant standards in section 707. And that's more specifically the citation is 707.06(c)(4). And the standards are as follows. Is the proposed structure, or in this case structures, compatible with the design of the landmark building on the site? It also gives a list of things to consider. Is the location and orientation of the new structures, in this case, on the site consistent with the typical location and orientation of similar structures within on the site or within the district or corridor? Are the changes to the yard area, such as planters, fences, ponds, walkways, and landscape materials, compatible with the historic setting? And are the individual permitted uses on the site of a scale appropriate to serve the properties surrounding the overlay? So I just wanted to kind of give that as an overview of kind of the four categories of things that we'll be looking at and that the ordinance asked us to call our attention to today. I'm going to start off by sharing this perspective image. It's a rendering provided by the applicant. Many of these images will be elevations and renderings provided by the applicant. Again, so here we have, you're seeing my mouse cursor all right on here? Is it showing up?
Yes.
Good. So along here is Highway 212. This road here is Southwest 130th. So you have the building which steps back to the historic home, the other building which fronts 130th and the internal site, or the internal building to the site. So I'm going to run through each of those four points I just mentioned in a little greater detail. Standard one is whether the proposed structure is compatible with the design of the landmark building on the site. And there are a couple key factors in staff's opinion that suggests that many of the buildings are in fact compatible. You can see in their illustration here that the width and module size of the historic house at approximately 31 feet is reflected and sequenced kind of in a repeating pattern in the facades. The peaked ridge that was common both to the barn that will be demolished to make way for the new development, as well as the peak of the house roof itself, as well as the other gable end, is also reflected in those pitched roofs. You can see that the awnings line up to the parapet height of the house, and that there are some other kind of elements that align the different elements of the historic home. A word on the materials. So the applicants propose a range of materials. On those facades, the pitched facades, barnwood stained red and chestnut to reflect the agricultural history of the site and to hearken back, in staff's mind at least, to the silver thread kraut and pickle works, as well as more contemporary snap-on batten metal siding, kind of agricultural in character, but also kind of contemporary in style. And then for the body of the building set further back, a more standard industrial means of construction, kind of architecturally treated concrete. I believe it's tilt-up construction, but applicants can correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Correct.
Great. The standard two. Is the location and orientation of the new structures on the site consistent with the typical location and orientation of similar structures in the district or corridor? So to look at this, I looked at these kind of the surrounding development character. And you'll see that many of these buildings, these larger industrial buildings and some of these smaller ones, are set at a pretty similar distance from the street and kind of set back. They might not be of the same size of building because they're just, some of them are larger, some of them are smaller. But I think that just kind of looking at the overall orientation of the buildings on the site, they are pretty similar, I think, to the surrounding development. Keeping in mind, of course, that it is an industrial, lightly commercial and industrial context. Number three, are the changes to the yard areas, including planters, fences, ponds, walkways, now obviously some of these aren't going to apply, there are no ponds, compatible with the overall historic setting. So in terms of this, what I was looking at is primarily how is the arrangement of the buildings on the site and where they are, have left open space, whether that open space be parking or landscaped area, how does it coordinate with the remaining historic building on the site? So you have the Haverlach House here, and then along State Highway, this building follows the steps up and back to follow the angle of the highway instead of perhaps being set at a minimum yard depth and having more parking and circulation behind. So it does pull its visual mass back following the line of the highway such that the line of sight is preserved to the historic home, and so that when you're coming from the other direction, the visual mass of the building only starts to step up in as it recedes from the historic home. Likewise, by having the drive aisle here, creating the separation between the building three along 130th Avenue, it does kind of pull that visual weight away from the historic home. And so because the building along 212 steps back, and because the kind of visual weight of building three is pulled away from the historic home, I generally think that the yard areas are pretty compatible with the overall historic setting. I also want to just briefly address landscape materials and landscaping. So understandably, this is a very industrial context. It's in the middle, it's right on the edge of the Clackamas industrial area. And so I think it's safe to say that the surrounding context in the current era is not that similar to what was around there when the structure was originally constructed. There isn't actually that much, other than some quite nice mature landscaping along Highway 212 and a few mature trees at the beginning of 130th. There's not much around it by way of landscaping. And these would have been set in a more rural, dare I say, bucolic landscape originally. Of course, we have to keep this all in the context of being an industrial zone, but re-landscaped with these buildings redeveloped around them, I think does actually, the landscaping I think works well to highlight the historic home that's on site, and is actually a little bit more favorable. I skip back and forth between these images to the image and kind of character of that historic home. Finally, are the individual permitted uses of a scale appropriate to serve the properties surrounding the overlay? So this is a tough one to analyze to some regard. These buildings are being developed, best of my knowledge, somewhat speculatively. There's one tenant that the applicant has shared with me, and that's the feed store that's currently on the site. I believe is planning to relocate to one of these new buildings also on the site. Beyond that, we don't have information as to who the tenants will be. In terms of the scale of light industrial uses on the property, as you might be able to tell from this view, even the kind of larger industrial buildings are of a relatively small scale compared to the other buildings surrounding. And I think it's also worth mentioning that there are some limitations in the underlying zone, in the light industrial zoning, and specifically because this is in the regionally significant industrial area, that would limit many of the potential commercial or retail uses to 3,000 square feet per use, up to a total of 20,000 square feet. And that 20,000 square feet figure is of consequence, if only because the two buildings that I think are most suited to a retail or commercial use in total less than 20,000 square feet. So the site does appears to take that standard into consideration, or at least is in compliance with that standard. So for those reasons, staff is recommending approval with conditions. Before we get into questions and answers, I do want to just give a little bit of additional information about process going forward. So because this is a historic landmark site, the ultimate land use decision will need to make findings on those four standards that we talked about earlier today. And that will be included, of course, in the land use decision. That decision will actually be a hybrid of those four standards, as well as the standards that relate to the design review process. And so there are elements that will be additionally addressed by the design review committee. I don't want to get too far into the weeds on those because many of them are beyond the scope of our review tonight. But just know that there may be a number of other issues or concerns that spring to mind, and I'm happy to hear them and also to take them along and include them, present them to our design review committee members so that they could be aware that the issue was raised and take action on it if they see fit. So with that, I'll be happy to take whatever questions you might have for me, or we can start a discussion of those standards. Oh, Paul is here, and I did not see him log in. So I'm glad, Paul, thank you for raising your hand. Let me get you promoted into being a panelist.
I want to apologize. I had to reboot my whole system, everything, because I've been for 20 minutes trying to get online. And for some reason, things just didn't come together.
It's quite all right, Paul. You're in good company this evening. We've had a number of technical difficulties getting online, but I'm glad you're here to join us.
I would like to make just one comment about this. I am concerned that the design context of the buildings in the imagery has little relation whatsoever to what I'll call the bungalow or cottage design of the remaining building. And okay. It should not detract, but should complement in every way possible, as long as this is a landmark site. And this kind of basic preservational codes and mindset principles, mm-hmm. that to be in compliance with. And kind of the multiple roof facades and some of the flat roofs and things like this, I wish that there would be something that could give them greater design compatibility so as to not detract from the remaining building. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's a really good comment. I can't speak to the design temp, but maybe I don't know who on the design team would be the right person to direct that to.
You want to take that one, Nang? She must have dropped.
I want to talk about that too.
Okay, great. I think that's a really good comment. I don't know, Tuan, like if you have thoughts on that, or you'd like to maybe talk a little bit more about the design kind of concept or the premise of the design.
Well, I mean, the design concept was, you know, there were a lot of pitched roofs on this site, which we tried to echo, and scale breaking a big building down to a more simplified scale to, as you can see right in front of you, four components making up sort of equal parts to the house. You know, bringing in the materials that are similar to the materials that exist there on the site of the barn today, metal roof, wood siding, kind of the feel. Those are elements that very much reflect what is there today.
But historically, the metal roof and those types of designs and alterations are not of period. They are.
What's the barn with the metal roof? Is that something that was historic? That didn't relate. That barn is a metal roof. Big metal roof.
Was it metal at the time that it was codified as a
it is today.
Okay. I'm sorry, I have a telephone difficulty. I wanted to address that very similar to what Tuan has mentioned. What we are trying to do in here as a design wise is not necessarily directly copy what is there or previously there. What we were trying to do is we look at the building that is there today and trying to reflect the accent of what is there for the purpose of that period of time. But not simply what there is a purpose and there's a functionality and the economic perspective of the development that we need to also be considered. But at the same time, we wanted to respect what is previously there by not exactly copying the material and sizes and all that for that aspect. What we did was we looked at the history of those elements that is on the site, and we also utilized the skills and the building code design review concern that was addressed, the height, the scale, the architecture detail, material, color, and all the stuff. So we look at how we can actually give the user a similar experience of those elements that is in the historical building without having to directly mimic what is already there. We also have this functionality of the industrial zone that is currently there in that aspect. And we also wanted to bring and celebrate the modernity and the industrial side, the surrounding, and trying to combine that aspect with the historical building that is there. So we didn't really, in that aspect, copying each and every material, but we think we did a pretty good combination by bringing in the accent, the skill that the city and the building code is concerned about, and bring that to the specific industrial project that needed to have the functionality, the skill is there. So there might be an element, the wood, metal, roof that was not originally there in the restaurant building. But we tried to bring in what we could in the new design with the wood siding, the material, the scale, the color, that makes them very similar in the experience for the user. Does it answer the concern, the question that you have? Sorry, I wasn't able to answer previously.
Is anyone going to say something about that more?
Well, I guess I'm curious if that helps provide any context to kind of the rationale behind the design choices. And we can certainly, of course, glad to have more conversation on it. I have
a couple comments I'd be happy to make. I don't know how you could possibly mimic more than they have the appearance, the historical look of the restaurant building, the original, the landscape, the landmark restaurant. Overall, I mean, I see the wood siding on the fronts of those buildings, and I like that. I understand the sloped roof bit. I'm not terribly concerned, maybe a little bit, with the metal roofs, but as he said, the shed there, the barn, over the years has been converted, the roof has been converted to a metal roof, and that ship kind of sailed a while back. The other thing I was going to say is, what I do like about it is that it's not just a big, each building that they've designed is not just a big ugly box like so much of the other development around them. They've added character to it. And so, overall, I think they've done an admirable job of trying to insert a few of the characteristics of the remaining historic landmark, the landscaping, and the sight lines, and made the best of the situation. In my opinion, that ship sailed when the approval for demolition was given, and that when nobody wanted to move that barn or save it. I would have preferred that somehow it be incorporated into everything and restored and fixed up in some way. But overall, I'm not terribly unhappy with this. I think that ship sailed last meeting, and I think this is a fairly decent plan myself. Martha?
Yes?
I'm sorry. I keep talking with my mute on. We're just trying to join the technology problem. Yeah. I was going to say, I just did a quick search on metal roofs, and they were originally used in the 1850s on things like sheds and factories. According to the National Parks site. So I think the metal roof is I think they're good. And I think that when I first saw the pictures when the email came out last week, I thought the red on the siding looked wonderful. I think that I agree with you, Mike, that that's about the best they could have done with the new building. I think they look really good.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you compare it to everything else around there, they've done an admirable job of giving the whole thing character. No, it doesn't match the restaurant building, the historic restaurant, but you know, it it's not terribly bad, and I think overall it's a pretty good design. I know Paul doesn't like the idea. Paul, go ahead, say something.
Yeah.
Well, there you are.
I would prefer it to have more or less detracting features of it. And it's kind of like if I, at the end of where the that building faces the restaurant, if it was one kind of peak roof, right? Yeah, that part right there. If that went clear to the far side, over in here, I don't know if I could point to it with my clicker if you can see it, but anyway, that the, if I'm looking at it, from looking east at the building from the restaurant, I would love to have the frame of that roof line, kind of cover, go all the way over and create a facade right at the right there. Yes. Over that side. So as that it creates, it eliminates the box on that end. And if I can see the way the tiering of the different dormer effects of going along the line on an angle of the of 212 right there is makes it much more difficult, but this one end would create a massive change of the appearance of the building to look more like it's one structure, whereas as against being a box at that end. But I'm not finding a lot of defining things that make it not detracting. That's the point. I wish that there was more that made it not detract from the one building. And if we, it is kind of like if you can make those parts of the building that are highly visible be less detracting, then I bury the rest of it. And that's, and I get, that's the goal, is to try to what people see, what you can hide behind, and no one sees, then you don't worry about.
So, but, Paul, can I ask a clarifying question on that point? To your mind, would, so the gray that is proposed for the more kind of concrete tilt up portions of those buildings,
is
quite a different color than the other things on the site.
Yeah.
Would something, instead of perhaps instead of changing the roofline, would a different facade material or color treatment start to address some of your concerns?
Yeah, it would help, but it's boy, if you could have like the pitch of the roof of the barn, of the original barn that's being torn down.
If they can find a picture of it. His head one. Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Right here.
Yeah. If I could capture that pitch on that one end of the building right here. Yeah. And if I could capture that, and even on the building that's on the street coming, that building right there, if I could somehow we can try to have facades that have some linkage or greater linkage than little in the design, so as that they do not detract. It's kind of like we're trying to just have something that is less detracting.
I'd have to make a comment on that. Like when you say less detracting, you're saying that these roof lines create the distracting elements.
Yes.
Are you saying if we took them off, would that be less distracting in your mind?
If they were not visible, right as you take from that dorm that you're right, this one right there, And if that went all the way over to the other side,
it would be completely out of scale.
It would mimic the original building that was the barns being torn down.
We're not talking about the barn today, are we not, right? So we're not talking about the barn today.
No, but again, it's part of what was this site. And what you're doing is you're eliminating it and you're bringing in stuff that has no connection to it.
No connection to it, but the building surrounding this site is what I would say. No connection to it would be, let's flip to the larger site plan.
The other buildings around these buildings don't have anything to do with this. This is a historic site, and all of the other architecture and all of the other buildings has nothing to do with design review of this property.
Sure, I understand, but it doesn't say anything about having to do what is there. That's the key. Was there.
That was
is to be torn down. So it doesn't talk about any of that. So in making an effort to try to bring the scale down, we've created these elements to bring the scale down. They're more human scale. A big roof is going to be less human scale in every way.
But if you would take and mimic this over here, it would give me a lot more attractive to look like this. Or on the other side here, then it would match this.
I can't
really
see what you're saying.
The roof of the restaurant of the old house, it's a big long roof, high pitched. These are about half, is what I'm saying. If you would extend this a little bit, it would be more attractive to look just much like the old house. I mean, that might be out of whack, but I mean that for visual effect, like Paul said, it would mimic this this. I don't know where it would cost wise or, you know, feasibility, but just for aesthetic looks. A thought.
May I come in and say some things?
Yes. Yes, please.
I first of all, I have way back in the dark ages. My degree was in housing and home furnishings, and my husband was a builder, and so I would choose the plans and so on. So I've been acquainted with a lot of things. I have several questions on these things, and I have the picture. My brain and my mouth don't want to always get together, but I have the picture that shows the completed buildings. And I'm going to start off by asking Alex, from the driveway that is going in and out of the property to Sunnyside Road, how many feet should there be to have that road there?
So do you mean in terms of the county's roadway and engineering standards?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Because I see this long truck with a big back end backed up to that flat-topped building back there. And I check further, and where the cab of the building right in front of that seems to have some kind of a, I don't know whether it's sloped down or whether it's flat, for water to be kept. So if that truck is going to go out and want to turn right on 130th to get into the lane to go east, but probably it would be in the lane to go west. And I live about a mile from there, but I'm trying to think if that has a light, stop and go light there, or does the vehicle have to try and zoom out between cars?
Nope.
Nope. What?
it's a regular stoplight at that intersection.
Okay, that's good.
But the distance between the stop line and the driveway going in, what is the calculated number of feet up to 212?
It's approximately 140 feet.
From the driveway to where they stop. So that's adequate for the county road requirements for egress and in and out.
Yeah. So as a part of the design review application being heard by that committee next week, County Roadway and Development Engineering reviewed the site design and kind of checked all the driveways and things for these kinds of questions.
Okay.
Yeah, and I don't see how that discussion has anything to do with the historic review part of this meeting.
It was just brought up, and to me, my biggest concern is that there is just the compatibility of the building designs is not complementary, but it's detracting from the one historic building. And if we don't want to worry about that being detracting from it and say that that's okay, that's a majority decision to be made. But I just think if they could do better in the facades and how they could do it to make sure they could still say keep all of the industrial or multi-use capabilities of the structures and rentability. I own commercial property myself, and you got to rent it. And all I can say is that I would love to see some changes in the roof design. I think that what's being presented is simple, and in this case, simple is not good enough in the sense that it leads to detracting. And some way that there could be something that the part that's seen by people every day makes it look more compatible.
Can I ask, in the vein of our purpose being friendly to neighbors who would like advice on how to keep their properties historically accurate, then we need to be specific on what it is you would like to see. Maybe you have some great ideas, but if you could be specific in what you share, I feel like the rub here is that they are attempting to keep a historic sense in a place that has become totally industrialized, and they're trying to use their property to the best of their ability to run businesses, which is entirely within their right. So what specifically could we do to advise them? Because that's our job, and we want to be as friendly about it as possible so people want to come back.
I would love to see the one end of the building that's facing the restaurant, if whatever you want to call that, a bungalow or cottage design of historic, that one end, somewhat mimic it. So there's a lot of, if I take the length of the roof, the length of that building right there and compare it to the other building right there, it's not that much different. And so if I was to take that same design and put it right across over there and create the facade, I'm just effectively doubling the facade, so I eliminate that one square end of the building that looks at the restaurant. and that would be a nice step forward. And I could potentially even do the same thing on the other building that's facing this the street right there. It, right now it has these two little dormers facing out that side. Maybe I flip that and put one big dormer and this peak, maybe whatever that the that looks like about a 612 roof pitch that's on the cottage home right there. And if I took and put a 612 pitch on this on the other building right that's along the side street there and rent it the whole length of it, you know, I could create even a barn face. I could create something that we're eliminating, and I just it's just design and is trying because it's a historic property. If it wasn't a historic property, we wouldn't worry about it. But it is, and it, we either say we care or we don't care.
I'd like to make a comment on the roof lines too, and that's the idea that I'm looking at this picture, and the front building is half on the 212, and it's, so if you took the four roof lines and took two and make only two, and if you look at the west end of the existing building there, that roof, you could flatten it a little bit, but you would have two instead of the little pointed peaks, you would have two of that, and then again on the western end of it, have a third thing. So you would have three peaks on there rather than five and nothing. And I'm looking also at their building, two buildings on the eastern side of that. Looks like it used to be a red roof, but I'm not certain. It looks kind of slightly pink, but it has a slight movement to it. And the one I think is killing this thing is that big square warehouse with a flat roof. And if that was a slight roof that's been picked up from over there, that might be something that would be easy. And then the building that faces 130th, I think somebody said do the two, and that would take care of that. My question, and I have quite a few questions, is this supposed to be things like that's happening off of 155th? With having this coffee shop and having that type of thing, or will this be people that are going to be, what kind of products are they going to be selling? Is it house buildings and that type of thing, or is it who knows whatever?
Yeah, good question, Martha. So in terms of the use of the structures, apart from the relocation of the feed store, I don't believe it's known at this time. But if I'm being completely honest, the nature of the tenants is not germane to our review this evening. I think you raised some really good points about the design of the buildings. But I'd like to kind of keep us focused on the relevant criteria. Now,
so I can't ask. I looked at the other another layout, and it looks like these little buildings that are stuck together are very small. And I forget, but I would think that there would be a place for restrooms, and not a single one has a restroom there.
Right, and I can let maybe the applicant speak to that a little bit more, but these are speculatively constructed, and I imagine a future tenant will come and rent a certain portion of that interior volume of space, and then their specific improvements that they need for their specific business will be the point at which we review building permits for bathrooms, break rooms, the interior structure of these are basically being built, best of my knowledge, as building shells into which new uses will be put. And they could be subdivided in a way such that somebody might come and buy, or sorry, lease one of the four peaked roof lines across 130. They might come in and lease three of them. Each of those roof lines may not actually connote a separate interior space. They may not. We just don't know that at this time.
Okay. I want to go to Plants. I'm a master gardener, and I don't know how long the people that have been doing the landscaping, how long they've been in Portland to know what kind of plants are good and bad. But when I took one of my plant identification and growing and so on classes, the professor said, we are in the most optimum growing area practically in the world. And because of what's there, if you look at the labels that it comes and it says we'll be 10 feet tall and 4 feet wide, don't do it. Because of our soil and weather, just a minute, just because of our soil that we have and the weather and everything, you double that. And I saw some of the trees, the one of them that was going along the front is, and I can't remember the name, my brain is, when you get old, you do it. But there's a couple of trees there, the top two on that map that you have, and the one that is going to have little teeny tiny pink flowers on it. My tree is just starting to get those flowers coming out. But I've not had any problem with it, but I know several nursery people say, ooh, I don't like to carry that. But if you're planting these trees along the street and you're going by that, whatever the, any kind of a reference thing says, you've got to double it because you're going to be in big trouble. And then you have to prune the heck out of it, or you have everything squeezed together and it isn't a very good thing before the person who is there to have to pay more than he needs to because you're putting in more plants than should be there. So I didn't know whether you were familiar with that, but that's something to think about.
Sure. So I think in terms of addressing, I think in terms of how the plant selection addresses the standard that we're looking at related to the landscape, our changes to yard areas, including, and then it goes on to list landscape materials, such as plants, compatible with the setting. I'll maybe refer to Teresa, or to, is it Teresa or Teresa?
It's Teresa.
Teresa, yeah. So I believe you're the landscape architect on the project. And so
yes,
I'll defer to you on those questions.
We follow all the codes for the plantings, and certain areas of the code require certain size plantings, and that's what that's why we plant trees along the road and
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, Teresa, but I think I would also just chime in and give a little bit of context from the land use code's perspective that our zoning and development ordinance, Martha, and you'll remember this from your time on the Design Review Committee, in Section 1009 has specific standards for the coverage area of the plants, as well as the size and maturity level, kind of maturity of those plants when they're planted. So for instance, trees have to be, if they're coniferous species, have to be a certain height when they're planted. Deciduous trees have to have at least a 2-inch caliper when they're planted in order to ensure that they have the maturity to survive. And so many of the elements of the landscape as proposed are responding directly to the county's requirements. And so I can't necessarily justify asking them to change something if it's specifically responding to a zoning standard they're going to be required to meet in order to get approval.
Anthony?
Yes.
The current planting code doesn't even take into it, has even address plantings that are consistent or compatible with any property's historical setting, do they?
That's correct.
They don't say anything about the historical setting. I've never seen this.
Correct. And so there's two questions at play here, and I'm glad you raised that. So the element that relates to the historic context or the overall historic setting is the standard in section 707. But
right,
a landscape planting must adequately respond to the 707 standard and the composition, maturity, and installation standards in 1009. So it's kind of a subject to two push and pulls.
I don't remember, 707's got a lot to it. I don't remember where it addresses plantings.
It doesn't explicitly. This the standard that I have on the screen here changes to yard areas, and where it says landscape materials is really as close as it comes to that. Landscape materials in this case might include the species and extent of plants.
If it had a historic cherry tree on it, I would imagine that would kind of apply, but
correct,
this is all new stuff. Nothing there is original.
I would be inclined to agree.
Well, I'm not challenging the particular product there. I'm just saying I go and see these places, and about 3 years later, the beds are so full, squeezed together, and whether that is what the person wanted, but then they have to start pulling them out or doing different things. It's just, I'm saying here in the Portland area, the plants grow faster and produce more growth than other places.
Well, I say we let the design review address all that. That doesn't seem to be in our bailiwick right here. I have something to say about, I'm going to stick my neck out because I know, Paul, I hear you about roof lines, and Martha also. This may seem silly in a way, but I know when they built the Oak Grove storage unit across from Fred Meyer on Oak Grove Boulevard at near 99E, one of the things that the community council proposed, because that building had a huge, ugly wall that faced some residential homes, it was proposed that a mural be put on that wall. And I don't think it ever happened, but...
Oh, no, it's there.
Is it?
Yeah. It's up against it. I know it's there because I had to go do the site inspection before we signed off for their certificate of occupancy.
I live within sight of it, and I don't know that it's there. I haven't really looked. But I think my point is, what if we just try to break up that wall, those two walls, actually, the one that both of the walls that face the historic restaurant building. What if we somehow required that a historic type mural be put on those walls so they just don't look so ugly, and that would provide a little bit of historic character to the setting. It's kind of a
brilliant solution, actually.
Kind of tongue in cheek, but two murals would help a little bit, and they'd give the site a little bit more respect than these graphics show.
So I have to tell you, I am of two minds on this because
I'm sitting down.
I love that solution, but I can tell you a little bit more background on that Oak Grove project you referenced. The mural was determined through the hearing officer's decision.
Yeah.
That project was appealed, and then subsequently it was a condition of approval instituted by the hearings, our land use hearings officer.
Yeah. Fred.
Yes, Fred, at the time it was Fred. He's since moved on to another county, unfortunately. But subsequently, we received guidance from our county council that because of a Supreme Court decision related to content neutrality in government decisions, I'm not making this up, I swear, we are not, because we have to determine that thing, we have to make our decisions on a content neutral basis. Murals are indistinguishable in our code from signs.
Oh, because wow. We
have to make, I know, but we have to make those determinations consistently, and so that is absolutely an option. However, I think the only way to get there would be to ask the applicant to essentially cash in all of their allowable sign area for their businesses into a mural, and I don't know if in good conscience we can go there. And that's why, yeah, I was kind of pointing in the direction of colors or materials or some kind of a surface treatment that would either by color let it recede or tie in with a material, because that's not a sign, not a mural.
Well, it's kind of like if you could take and even put imitation windows, you know, where you make them look like a narrow, tall, but something that is compatible in window design to the restaurant building.
Something to just break it up?
Break it up, and you put multiple windows across the sides of these things. I would love to have a roof facade across that one in building that's facing the restaurant, and even on the other, yeah, that one right there. That would be doable, and it would mimic almost the size and pitch of the restaurant. right there. And you could just say, you know, imitate it right there, and it doesn't go back. But then in the wall there, you put in windows, even if they don't have actual glass in them. You just frame them in something that makes it, breaks it all up and makes it look like it fits with some balance.
It fits is a subjective.
I know, but you know, there is spacing and balance that are part of these historic designs, and you know, where they did everything with some degree of rhythm, and you're trying to, if we could create something that transported a little bit of that rhythm into that one end of the buildings, or these two ends of the buildings, that people will see driving into the driveway or right across from this. And it's just an example of saying, okay, it's a historic property, we've got a historic building, and we're going to walk a little bit of the extra mile to make it, camouflage it. Let's
I hate to cut in, but I wanted to give a little bit history about the background on what we come up with. So during our design as architect, we sort of struggle at the same time to how much is too much, right? And how much is too little. And we wanted to understand the space of those buildings as well. And oftentimes in throughout or a lot of the building that we have seen, not only in Portland, but in many other part of the town, the requirements wanted more glazing, right? But when you actually look at the functionality of the space, sometimes there is just not enough space for them to put in any type of kitchen space. So you tend to see more and more glazing area being covered with blinds. And then when we were looking at this specific area, we look at the usage of the restaurants in there. And then there was an existing trash enclosure around in that location as well. And we look at the AC condenser that is in that area. And we look at the building that we proposed, that corner that you were talking about, at the functionality of the space. And we think most likely that area is not going to be the frontage, because we know that in that area there's a loading that is coming up. And we wanted to also doesn't want to put in that just the glazing without actual functionality that attached to the future usage. So what we've come up with is there is always, instead of putting more glazing just for the sake of having it, or actual trying to bring in the quality material and also the landscaping, how to soften it out, just the juxtapositions of all those materials that make up all that space. So there was a deep considerations that put into those corner where we place the pitch roof, where we will be looking at the empty wall, yet putting the landscape in front of it. So from the other side, you look at in the rendering itself, the landscape wasn't there. But when you look at the landscape plan, there's a landscape being planted right in front of it. How that is opposed to the AC condenser that is in the existing restaurant that is placed in that. And so the functionality of, if we are going to put in the storefront, is that the proper usage for that space? So we look into that consideration why we are addressing that particular corner as well. I also wanted to point out there are many elements that is going on in the restaurant space, and we understand that. And that's the beauty of that restaurant. At the same time, the feature that is there, the roof and all that. And one of the big brainstorming session when we are having that is how much of that we wanted to take into the design. And I happen to live in this commercial, very close to this commercial space near my house. And I think they're trying to put in too much by just putting in a different shape of roof that they could possibly imagine. And every time we have visitors visiting it, they commented on how cartoonish and Disney-like that building is because it's just too much. And when I was looking at that and we wanted to see what is more authentic to the industrial zone that is there currently right now, and also be very respectful of the building that is next door. And what would the people be walking around, and what are the elements that we needed to bring into there? Well, one of the things that we wanted to emphasize on that the human skill, the material that is enriched in the current site. And we bring in those elements, and we also wanted to be very conscious about the developer, our client who is going to build this building, and what are the things that we could bring in. So there is the economical perspective of that development, as well as using that development, and so we can actually emphasize on the quality of material instead of just throw in different type of shapes to this. So those are the considerations that we made very cautiously in this. We wanted to bring in the quality. We wanted to bring in the sadness. And we also wanted to bring in the what the design review has mentioned, the human skill, the proportionality, the material, and the quality of the building and the landscape and the proportion in between. So that is one of the effort that we try to make. And even the entry site, we wanted to make sure that when someone is walking along that street from the restaurant, we're not looking at the sharp corner of the industrial building. So that's one of the reasons we actually wrapped around that metal roof and the detail of the standing seam metal roof, and we also bring in the slight window that going higher in that corner. If you can zoom in, I don't know if you can see it. Yes, that element, and also in the entry area in between the road and the restaurant. Those are the things that we try to bring in. So it's, we wanted to be subtle. We wanted to make sure that those are the things that is also practical for the TI spaces, right? So we did put a lot of considerations on those placements, and we didn't want it to, I'm cautious about just not throw in so much yet in reality when someone actually comes in as a tenant, there isn't a practical usage of it and end up covering it up and just gain more solar heat gain through that. So we wanted to be very cautious about all those when we are making those. And I do appreciate the comment that you made that make us very cautious about when we are making those decisions and what are the things that we need to be considered about in the future and as well moving forward. So thank you very much for all the comments that you have made, and really appreciate the time that you have put in to review all these. And we, our teams have taken a lot of time in trying to make things an area that where the surrounding neighborhood can sort of thrive together. At the same time, we wanted to make sure that the developer itself has set up for the success for that development as well, right?
Well, I'd like to interrupt for a second. The roof design has no eaves. If I take a look at the design of the little facades, but the big one that's facing the restaurant, if it had eaves, it would come out. The little windows along the side, everything that you're saying about is really ultra modern, has nothing in context to the historic nature of the restaurant building, roof design, or anything. And what is wrong? This is where you detract. If I have a design that has some elements, so if you take a look at the restaurant over here, at the restaurant building, and you see what they are, it has an eaves that comes out off in the front and the back and the sides, and the dormer has eaves. And these buildings over that you have over here, the roof designs and the metal coming down and the little tiny windows along the side facing 212, those are really inappropriate designs. They do not have rhythm or compatibility. But I recognize that you take a look at this with 21st century lenses. And all I'm saying is that the designs are should be, when I have a 21st century design and I'm putting it right next to something built in 1930 or 40, and whatever the date of the building of the restaurant, that's completely different. So your roof, the designs, the elements of it, the windows of them have no comparison or compatibility whatsoever. And when they do, when they're in that world, they end up detracting. Now, if this was not a historic property, I wouldn't be worried about it. But you're setting a building right off to the side. And I think that the side, west face side facing the restaurant, that could be marvelously transformed into something that looked a hell of a lot better, excuse the term, but it is just mimicking a little tiny bit of the design and the rhythm of that building on that one side, and then trying to create something that has some compatibility. And even that the building that's facing 130th, you know, I could take and run the pitch of the roof down through the long parallel with 130th and create some type of pitch that would mimic to some degree the building that's going to be torn down. And all I'm just saying, these are just facades, and it does not change who occupies, how they rent, who your renter is. What you're just trying to do is not detract from the one historic building that's left. That's at least my opinion. Thank you.
Thank you. All right.
So I think maybe we're at a point where I think everyone has kind of expressed their thoughts overall. I don't know. Yeah, I will leave it to you, Mr. Chairperson, to see if we want to try to solicit a motion or a recommended condition or take it from there.
Mr. Chair, I would love to have a continuance of this until the design review. I would like to see what the design review people have to say at the subsequent meetings going to happen. Because somewhere along the line, this is kind of almost an integrity thing. I would love to see some more integrity in what we're trying to do and have something that is more compatible. And I right now, the roof designs and the imagery that's that of the part that people see from the streets from 130th or from 212, I'm not going to worry about the building in the back corner. I'm just trying to get the image of what it has. I think it's an important statement for us to make that we care about maintaining the integrity of a historic property. That's all.
Is that a motion?
Excuse me, may I say something? Can I say something really quick?
Sure, please.
I do not think. This is Beth with AAI Engineering. I'm a land use planner, and I do not think we need to continue this any further because this is one man's opinion. I distinctly heard two other people on this committee that actually liked the design. So I think that this person is speaking from their own personal opinion, which he has every right to do, but everyone's allowed to have an opinion. This project has been designed to code. And when we go to design review, we will be reviewed on how we meet to code. So I see no point in continuing this any further.
Well, there's still a question of compatibility. Like Paul said, if it wasn't a historic house, we wouldn't be having this argument. And if you have something that would mimic, as Paul would say, the features of the thing, which you could see, this is totally different. I mean, you have five little houses along one side and that's fine. But if you would extend that roof over and match the restaurant, then it would be more compatible. And it would fit, and it would break it up more. This is a historic house, and we're in the Historic Review Board. So it's got to be compatible somewhere.
So can I ask
well,
a clarifying
I personally
question?
Think it's compatible.
Well, then we have a decision. Then we better vote on it, hadn't we?
May I just ask a clarifying question? Were this to go, when this goes to the Design Review Committee on Tuesday morning, if they were to look at it and say they're fine with it, what then? I mean, if we were to continue it, which isn't my preference, but that's me. I prefer to come up with a solution that we can kind of find a commonality behind this evening. But if they were to take a look at it and say they are fine with it as it's with the solutions as they're presented today, I don't know what.
Can I ask, Anthony, you're saying that the Design Review Committee has nothing to do with compatible design. It's just whether it meets some code.
They're looking at whether it is, whether it meets the building design standards in Section 1005. Well, the number of development standards in the 1000 series.
Okay.
They are actually, I think to your point, also looking at I think it's Section 1004, where it does address some preservation related criteria. I'm not saying that they're not looking at it for compatibility. I'm saying if they were to look at it and say they feel it is appropriate for the site.
So in our design guidelines, there is no compatibility issue? In Kanema, which is a National Register Historic District, the guidelines say it has to be compatible. It doesn't have to. I mean, we're not telling you what you can build, but it needs to fit in
right.
the community and look the same.
I think to your point, that is also true in our ordinance, and that is what we're being asked to consider today relative to the standard of Section 707.
The
question of compatibility really is meant to be decided, or at least the planning director is seeking input and guidance from this board on whether that compatibility standard that's on the screen currently is met by the design. And if not, then what reasonable conditions of approval could be recommended to move it into compliance?
So what do we do to, there seems to be a deadlock here. What do we do to resolve this?
Well, it is possible to, I guess, have it be a split vote.
That's a no vote.
Well, there isn't necessarily a yay. I mean, it would not be in favor of approval, but the Historic Review Board, like the Design Review Committee for that matter, is an advisory body. And
right.
I take their advice seriously. It is not my professional opinion that I definitely understand the case that Paul is making, and it's well reasoned. I don't professionally agree with it myself, but it's well reasoned, and I want to make sure that you all know, like, I hear you, I think that I want to hope that we can find some kind of a solution that can get a majority vote of this body to make a recommendation.
Have they voted?
They have not yet.
As I understand the bylaws of the Historic Review Board, the Historic Review Board can deny an application, even though the Historic Review Board doesn't really have the final say.
That's correct. No, you absolutely. I am trying to be proactive and suggest that maybe we could find a solution that would get a favorable recommendation. But it is certainly within the power of this board to recommend against approval.
Juan misread his audience.
I'm sorry?
Well, I would, uh, I would, I would love to see the architect or whoever is responsible for creating the facades to come back with a new image of what they could do that is not proportionally expensive or obligating them for something that shouldn't happen because it's, but something that they could do to try to create these roof designs. I have no eaves on them. You know, it's kind of like, take a look at the restaurant. And here I've got these smooth types of finishes coming down the, on like on the corner building or the corner facing the restaurant on at 212 on that one side and the sides there and metal coming down the little slotted windows and no eaves on there and anything. It's just, it's not even coming within, you know, if I say 1 to 100 and it's coming in 10 or 20, 80% of it's not there. And so you're saying, what could I do to make it pull in the rest of the 80% or something? What we have here is just, in my estimation, far too modern, far just simply functional, and nothing about it that's historic or compatible to a historic property.
What we have here is an issue having to do with the definition of compatibility with the design of the landmark building site. I don't believe that the ZDL 707 defines what makes it compatible, does it?
I know that the national code for national preservation does.
Does our ZDL 707 define that? Because that's the sticking point here.
It does not explicitly define compatible. In the case where a term is not explicitly defined in the definition section of the zoning ordinance, we typically, and I think by policy, refer to a dictionary definition of the term. Dictionary definition of compatible. This is just one, but able to exist together without trouble or conflict, going together well. And this is, obviously there are a number of definitions. I would also suggest that there are kind of more architecturally specific definitions of compatibility that might be of more significance to this consideration. I want to take a minute to welcome Amanda, who is joining us.
Amanda?
Welcome.
Hello, everyone. Sorry, I'm late. I had another meeting before this meeting that just...
Amanda, have you been listening in on to any of this?
Unfortunately, I wasn't able to do both because I was chairing the other meeting too. So that, like, I couldn't listen in. But I have a few, my gut is telling me a few, I have a feeling there's a few hot topics. So
I think I'm going to try to summarize. And yes. I hope that one of the parties will correct me if I get something kind of drastically off. I think that there are two kind of two schools of thought as to this project. One broadly is that for a new development in a industrial context, the design works with the size of module and roof and some of the materiality both of the home and of the barn to be removed in a way that is generally compatible. I think to a point that was made earlier, quite contemporary, but contemporary in a way that is not, that attempts to replicate some of the design language of both the house and the barn. Alternately, I think that there's a case to being made that the buildings maybe don't go far enough in terms of picking up the design language of the house as it is on the site. Let me go back over to my screen here. Particularly of kind of interest, I think, is the number and pitch of the roofs along here, as well as kind of the prominence and expanses of the tilt up panel walls here. And so what we, so let me pause there, and I hope that anybody will chime in to kind of expand or give additional context that I may have inadvertently omitted.
Amanda, we were looking at the west face that looks at the restaurant and saying that if it had the same type of imagery as the restaurant roofline and put that same roofline on that one end, it's just the facade of that roofline. What we do is we eliminate that one pop-up concrete wall from and make it look like it's somewhat compatible and not detracting, because this is a historic property. And in a sense, all of the landscape of all the square footage of the lot or the parcel is all considered historic. And therefore, the buildings that go onto it should try to have some degree of design compatibility so as to not detract from the one remaining building of prominence. And so even in the driveway, when we come in off of 130th of the, we'll call the north end of that building right through there, again, is a prop-up concrete wall. You drive in, and this is right where the old feed store building was, or is to be demolished, right there. And if I took and changed the roof design and put a peak roof, and so what the restaurant is probably 612 or something like that in pitch, and I took that pitch and flipped it and went parallel to 130th, and I along through there and just created. But the restaurant has eaves. These roofs go straight down and mold down. And like on the corner of the, which would be the northeast corner of the quad building where all of the restaurant stuff right along through there, there's little tiny windows and metal coming straight down and no eaves, no nothing. And so the idea was just saying, let's step up and have just some degree of compatibility so as to not detract from the restaurant itself without trying to add any significant expense, just change the imagery by the way that we designed the roof in the image. And even on the flat panel, I could put fake windows right there on that concrete wall or something that would be underneath there just to try to create something that makes it just more compatible. You're the architect and we're the idealists. So
Paul, one idea that has occurred to me, and sorry to Amanda to jump in, I know I'm trying to throw to you. One other idea that occurred to me as a member of the design team was talking about the landscaping along this wall here is the idea of trellising that mounts to the wall that could be trained to have like a vining plant grow up it to really, it would kind of naturalize that wall and soften it a little bit. It doesn't get to your question of the roof line, I understand, but I think it does start to reduce the impact of that expanse.
Like soften the wall. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's something that has any appeal, but it occurred to me.
Amanda, I'll throw in that Anthony already shot down my mural idea.
Yeah, no, sorry.
No murals, huh?
No murals. The Supreme Court says no. And this Supreme Court. The Supreme Court, like, anyways, never mind. I'm not going to get into that.
From a SHPO standpoint?
No, from a content-neutral analysis of, our zoning code has to be content-neutral in how we assess things. And anything that is pictographic, anything, is a sign in our code. We have to treat them all as signs.
Which is a darn shame, yeah. Because I really thought that, you know, some kind of a mural depicting the barn or history of the Clackamas area or anything would break up that blank wall on both
I love the
buildings
idea.
A lot. It's a great idea.
In Oregon City, we have these murals in Oregon City of Lewis and Clark and everybody.
But anyway,
believe
Amanda,
me, I wish I could do it. I just know that if I show up in the plan director's office with a decision that is requiring murals, I am going to get historic review planner.
The other thing, Amanda, that I pointed out is that our bylaws actually say that the historic review board can deny an application if we feel strongly enough about it. It doesn't mean it's going to change anything in the long run, but it would be taking a stand, and you could probably deny it if the board chose to, and with the explanation that the design doesn't meet compatibility, our compatibility goals, something to that effect. So that's something to consider too. I don't know if you looked at the plan, if you've had time to look it over, and what your instincts were at off the top of your head. We haven't heard your initial opinion. You've just heard ours,
which is great to hear. Definitely, actually. Can you go to the diagram of the scales?
Yes.
For the compatibility diagram. Yeah, perfect. So I did think from like a height and just general scale of building, like modulation, as they called it, standpoint. I thought that was a nice like description of how they approached the massing. And I thought that was successful. However, from like the roof pitch standpoint, the apertures, you know, kind of complementing each other, I don't know that I necessarily see that. You know, I am slightly a modernist myself. So I, you know, I'm, from my own personal design standpoint. However, you know, there's the aspect of, you know, delineating between modern and the historical aspects. So like the roof wrapping down, like I'm open to that gesture, but like, where does it tie back to the actual existing historical structure? They have the height levels that, you know, they're trying to draw from some existing heights, but like in the end, what's more important, those heights or the roof pitches, or, you know, can they, or the modulation of the width, because that all kind of impacts proportions for various, you know, for those various reasons. So it's definitely you know, I can hear and see where those, you know, challenges lie from a historical tie standpoint. And the other aspect being like, I also do see from like when we're looking at the aerial standpoint, you look at the context around it. So you see a lot of the concrete tilt-ups just everywhere, right? So from that, like, okay, we're really in an industrial zone. So how, you know, respecting that in the end, this is an industrial zone with a historical overlay on it. I agree that those primary facades that we're speaking of on the north and west sides, those two, that it does kind of it does feel a little stark and contrasty. I mean, if you wanted to flip, play devil's advocate, you could say, well, it's really letting the house be center stage, but I'm not sure that we want, I don't know if we want that or not. but there is, you know, there's some truth to that. But I, you know, it definitely feels a little cold. And, you know, does that really relate back to the historical context of what was there. I'm trying to, the one thing as we were talking, I realized I don't recall the orientation of the original barn that was there. It was north south, right? Yeah.
Let me get to, yeah. So it's this.
Oh, right here. East west.
It's east west.
No, it's right, the other one. That's right. Excuse me. Yeah.
So, I mean, we should take that into consideration of what was actually there before. And, you know, that elevation, was it really that interesting that activating to begin with? And unfortunately, my memory is failing me slightly on what that facade looked like. If there were a lot of apertures in it, or if it was a blank wall. That was just a wood plank texture. We could request, texture added to that wall,
Well, that you're trying to recall what the features of the barn look like.
Did
it have a barn door on the back and
there?
In the front and a couple more modern windows. There you go. Thank you.
Because from my thoughts and process, it's like I kind of almost wonder if that building there should relate to drawbacks onto some of this history, more so than the house itself. I don't know. I'm also slightly designing, and that might be out of our discussion point, but.
You know, I think there's a good point to that. And to me, the roof pitch that I'm looking at there of the barn, of the feed store building, and if I could take that pitch and just pivot it on the one building that's facing 130th and just have that pitch come along on that one building there, and little of that same type of pitch, but more in line of the restaurant on the other building, but where you create some type of comparatively historic kind of inciting and imagery in the old feed store building. That was just what I was inside looking at the way it was built. It's just simple wood building of a long time ago, you know, the walls and nothing there that was of anything that wasn't, nothing was expensive. It was all simple. And I just look, but if I could get that pitch on the one building is facing 130th, and I do that, and then I do the pitch on right there, I would say that would be like win-win. All of a sudden people come driving in, they see a building that has some type of comparative design characteristics. And this, the other one does not. And if I take the other building that's with the four facade dormers on one side, but then on the one side facing the restaurant, I put a bigger roof design that goes up and mimics the pitch and eaves and everything of the restaurant, then all of a sudden I've got something that says, okay, I've done those two things and I'm 90% of the way there. And this is where it is right now. Just so that wraparound roof that comes down without eaves and on that one facing that comes down facing the restaurant turns me awfully cold. And then if I could just do something up with the 130th building and eliminating these two visible walls, then I think we've hit a home run. We're just trying to do the best we can get that on a historic property. Well, if the property was not historic, we wouldn't worry about it. Don't want to detract from the other.
I think I've heard enough. This debate could go on for another hour at least with no resolution. I've heard comments from at least three people on this historic review board that are not happy with the compatibility aspect. And we do have the option of making a denial and making a statement that we deny it with the concern of compatibility. So I'm ready to make a motion that the Historic Review Board denied the application based on the application's incompatibility with the remaining historic landmark. And we can take a vote on it and do whatever we want. And
I will second that motion.
And then Anthony just has, if it passes, Anthony has to deal with it with the design review committee.
Well, I mean, before we get to a vote, if I could just jump in for a moment. I certainly want you all to vote your consciences and something that's true to your feelings on the project. I'm going to struggle to make what would be legally defensible findings that it is not compatible without more specific. I mean, I'm afraid that when it comes to the final land use decision, I am going to, in order to actually deny the application, I'm going to have to make what would our findings that will stand up to a hearings officer as to why this is not compatible. And I don't want to put you in the position of substituting your judgment for mine necessarily, because ultimately I do value all of your opinions, but this is an advisory vote. I want to be clear on that.
Could we be asking for a new review by their architects or designs to see what they could do to come back with something that incorporates greater compatibility to the roof designs historically present on the property, to where the buildings that are visible to the streets and imagery are have greater context to what was there in design, and try to create, even if it's just a facade, but the appearance that it has some type of compatibility. Right now, we're not seeing that with the design of what is seen by most, will be seen by most of the people. And therefore, it detracts from the existing historic building.
I think this is your opinion of compatibility. What if the design review board has the exact opposite opinion of yours?
Okay, then they
do. No. I mean, I'm just thinking in time. We go and we change all this, and they say we hate it.
Well, I would. That's
not where we want to go.
Well, I know, and we wouldn't want you to go that way, because if I think that they will understand. I think that what's wrong here is that this design fails to understand the need for compatibility and has gone into a very functional, modernistic thing. And I can see it. But if we were not on a historic property, I would say nothing. But because of the historic building, I think there is an issue.
Amanda. So I personally, my position as far as with modern versus historical architecture being adjacent to one another, I actually do believe that it's acceptable to have modern gestures with historical properties. And I think I personally am a fan of that. But I do think that there's some, when we look at roof pitch, kind of like, you know, we think about the key components of architecture and where you're trying to relate. They relate it in scale. So that's like, you know, a huge, thumbs up, good job. But then we look at roof pitch, we look at the window orientations and scales, and those two items, you know, don't completely relate. So those are some pretty, you know, primary aspects of architecture in there. You're right, they don't have the roof eaves, but their modern interpretation of that, I personally am okay with that. And, you know, obviously that there's, you know, everyone has their own opinion in that. So I do respect your opinion as well, Paul. But from a modern interpretation, and the other just big challenge that, like, with this site is it's an industrial site adjacent to a small house that's, you know, kind of on its own island at this point. So there's some challenges with that. And anyways, sorry. There was my two cents on modern versus historical.
Anthony, this is Ning. If you will be able to refer to this elevation of 130th South Deep rendering, not from the top view. I think there's another one. I think maybe next page, right? Oh, I think maybe one image might not be.
Okay, hold on one second. Yeah, I'll pull up the full application and we can.
Oh, yes. I know that we're looking at the site itself from an area view, right? At the same time, I think we also wanted to understand what it is that we are looking at when you're walking down the street, right? And I wanted to emphasize on the fact that it's not always an easy task when we have a site that is historical, and a lot more challenging when the site is located in the industrial zone. Yes, that's correct. The one below, right, yes. G0.4, yes. Thank you. So I understand the challenge of the reviewer having to deal with that. And I also understand that we wanted to also focus not mainly on the feed store that is going to be demolished, but also focus on the building that is left behind, right? And it's always a struggle for us to try to see how much of the historical building we wanted to remember. That we also wanted to make sure that what is left behind is also compatible with what we are building in. I think in this particular rendering and the elevations that we look at, and if we focus on the design development element, and we wanted to talk about the scale of that particular neighborhood walking down that street, and the scale of the material that is in the restaurant as well. And I think our design team has tried pretty hard to make sure that those design guidelines has been carried through in this particular elevation that is not too far away from the experience of the historical building. They might not be the same. They are definitely not to be the same. But the experience of walking down, and I understand the fact that we don't have the eave like the restaurant, and the purpose of the eave itself is to make sure that we don't have the rainwater that catching us, right? One of the reasons. As you can understand, we did have an overhang on those, even though we wrapped around and trying to have that modern language, yet refer back to the barn building wrapped around to that. We also had the canopy that is extend far out away, trying to understand and provide the equal functionality of the eave that is there. So we did make a lot of effort trying to make sure that the scale, the experience, the design guideline that was stressed on what Anthony has said in the beginning of the presentation of all those elements that is crucial in the approval of this review is carried through carefully in these. I understand the cautiousness that we have to make in the corner that is in the back, and we cannot forget the fact that this is an industrial zone as well. And there is a development, the economic aspect of this development that our client has to carry through. At the same time, we also are very cautious about the neighborhood that we are serving at the same time. So we are very cautious about the quality of the experience that the historical restaurant that is there, and we carry through. I understand there is that sharp corner that many people are. But if you look at the elevation itself, I think we provide the similar quality that we have on the historical building in the elevation of our 130th Street. And I understand that we focus on the area of the site. But if you look at the elevation, the experience of walking around that street, turning it to 130th, what we see is not that different from the historical building that we have at this point. And we try to bring in the material, color, texture of the site, at the same time trying to be able to function as an industrial development while maintaining the quality of the industry historical district at this location. So I think when you are making your decisions on the design aspect of it, when we are looking at the aerial view, how each corner can be sharpened and all that, but at the same time, please also be cautiously looking at the elevations that we provide and the user experience when you are walking down that site and how we have carried those elements through in our design. I think that's all I have to say. Thank you very much for your time.
And thank you. I think that's a really great reminder of the pedestrian experience and the scale factor. Like, I really do think the scale of what you've done is very appropriate. And, you know, to your comment of, you know, the canopies treated as if they're, you know, the porches. I think that's also valid from like a commercial and industrial interpretation. It really does provide, you know, that experience, and that design element that, essentially, you know, from a commercial standpoint reflects what that porch would be from a residential standpoint. So if we kind of look at those elements, those are successful for sure. So then I think there's, a part of me, you know, I guess like the realism of what's currently happening is it is an industrial area. And, in some ways it actually is, I hope more people walk that area, I guess is, like the parking, driving up and parking. Like, I think that would be a really nice experience.
My guess is if a restaurant of some kind or a small cafe or something goes in any of those buildings, you'll have a lot more pedestrian traffic.
Yeah. And so, to that, you know, and this is probably more of a site thing, so maybe I won't touch on that, but maybe it touches on the blank walls, off of the east and west, you know, blank walls and how to activate those. And, you know, what Anthony was suggesting with, you know, green wall or a mural, just kidding, but not, but,
Were that I could.
What if it just like showed up one night? But
fine, it's fine until somebody calls code enforcement.
There's gorilla art everywhere nowadays.
I think only county council would call code enforcement. Everybody else would be all for it.
I don't think even county council would, but
I'd like to say something.
Yes, Martha.
If we don't have the recognition of the things that we've talked about and we've given suggestions and so on, we might as well not have a historic review board.
Yes, that's exactly right.
I have a comment to that. No, we do, because if people are doing, like I did, I wanted to change something about my historic home. The idea is that people come to us for resources. I don't think we're supposed to be a gatekeeper. That's up to Anthony. I think we're supposed to be a friendly place to generate ideas and brainstorm. And it always seems to digress into an unfriendly place to be. It's not awesome. So we're not gatekeepers. We're supposed to just be advisors.
We're actually our gatekeepers, and to agree, Anthony is the one who is supposed to be the advisor in this case. And we're supposed to be kind of the judge and jury of what is appropriate and offer design advice. Only my hope is that they would take some of the design advice and say, okay, well, let's see what we can do to soften this stuff and to make it have some degree of compatibility. And it's not Anthony's job to do that. And we should be just suggesting it. And if we find that there's not enough of us that agree that it's compatible, and we give them some ideas what might help. And if they do it, if they don't. And we can just say is we're doing what our integrity tells us we should be doing.
If we aren't the gatekeeper to advise Anthony, then who is?
Yeah. And this is a role that I've seen.
I need to go. It's been over 2 hours and I haven't seen my children tonight. So I actually am hoping we can get to a place where we can vote.
I move to ask for a question or vote. Let's vote on it.
Call the vote.
Well, there's a motion on the table to deny the application based on the projects or the applications or the proposals incompatibility with the remaining historic landmark. That's the
motion
on the table. So we can vote either for it or against it. If you vote for it, that means you want to deny. If you vote against it, that means you want to approve it.
Call for a vote.
Who does that?
I'll run around. Michael. Sorry, Mike.
You want me to vote first?
No, I want you to vote last. Apologies. Martha.
I vote yes for the... trying to bring something else out that might be better.
Megan?
I don't know. I'm against the denial.
Amanda?
I need another moment. Sorry.
Okay. Paul?
I vote yes to deny.
Howard?
Yes, deny.
Amanda?
I just know that there's really, really bad interpretations out there too. So I'm trying to figure out if I don't think this is a bad one by any means. Gosh, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to say no.
Mike.
Well, I made the motion, but my gut tells me that my instincts tell me this is a historic landmark that's being swallowed up by an industrial complex surrounding it. And I think the designers have done a fairly decent job, a compromise of trying to preserve a little bit of the historic idea of the property. So even though I made that motion, I vote no.
All right. That leaves it 3-3. Did I miss someone? Nope. So we're deadlocked at 3-3.
Should I have what? Not showed up?
We don't have a tiebreaker.
So I think as deadlocked 3-3, I'd have to go look at the bylaws. I think what I would communicate in my staff report is that there was essentially neither a favorable nor unfavorable recommendation made, and that a good amount of input and thoughts were provided by the Historic Review Board, but it was basically acknowledged as received without favorable or unfavorable recommendation.
I thought if it didn't pass a majority, then it not going. It's not split decision, may no.
I mean, in the way the motion was formulated, I almost want to say that it was a motion of denial. And so right. A split decision on denial would go to the nays, thus would be for approval. Or there was not a motion of approval made. The motion of denial did not succeed.
Well, the motion of approval did not succeed either.
Right, and that's why I mean.
So
I vote for Anthony to have a vote.
I know. So does this? Is it better off that we do a motion of approved with conditions?
I would love to see us just have. I would like to send a message to the design review saying we think there should be greater design compatibility. That's the whole thing. If there was just greater design compatibility, we would all not have a problem. Right. You know, the layout, what they're trying to do, create multiple stuff. Looking at the aerial view, I'm just trying to get some, because it's a historic property, I would love to see the feed store design building have some input. I think there's a great opportunity with the building on 130th to do something significantly better than what that is there, that just to create something that has some degree of design compatibility to what is being demoed. And then the building face on facing the restaurant there, and having that concrete walls, those concrete walls on both as you drive in, just camouflage it some way. And the best way I could do it is to put a facade roof design that mimics the restaurant. I could do something on the same thing that mimics the feed store design pitch or design of the roof on that one building. And if it's going to be used as a feed store, there's a probability of that because they want to stay on the site. Wow. Then all of a sudden we're doing some things to say, hey, we're trying to maintain some design standards. That's all.
I think that they're part of the challenge of this particular proposal too, is the scale of it. The scale and the use really, they're just not compatible just looking at those two elements in themselves. So we really, the design aspect of it is so far from you know, compatible to begin with, just from those two standpoints that, I mean, it's really, it would be a challenge to like be idealistic in that way and to meet client expectations and budgets. I would assume that's probably an exceptional driver with this. Anthony, I think it would be another 2 hours to try and get to conditions of approval.
I would agree, most likely.
just because it is, there's a lot of elements to this that, you know, right. Obviously everyone feels there's a lot of strong opinions too. Sure. So if we're not required to provide, I guess the no to denial is, we'll come back to, is that an acceptable?
I think that's an acceptable vote.
Okay.
I think it then moves with what this body is saying to the planning director in their advisory capacity is that they neither recommend approval nor recommend denial. And
design compatibility was the issue.
What was it? Was a key issue. And I will gladly convey, I will, believe it or not, I will actually go back and listen to this meeting again, probably at like 1.5 speed. And try to summarize kind of the overall schools of thought and make sure that they're captured in an addendum. So my staff recommendation to the design review committee has been issued, but it's a recommendation only to them. I will supply them on Monday. Granted, it's only a day before, but you know, we move fast here. A summary of the discussion and an appraisal that there was there was not a majority in favor of denial. There was not a majority in favor of approval. And here are the salient issues, and ask for their input as well.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. How you all. Doing?
I make a motion. We dismiss the meeting.
I don't get the second, so somebody else go.
I want to thank everyone for being tolerant.
It's a tough
thank
one.
You very much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Paul, not Paul. Anthony, would you please bring us easier ones next time?
You know what? We've already, the memo, the invite should have gone out for the next one already.
Yeah, May 13th.
No guarantees that it's much easier.
Oh, man.
Actually, I think one of them, no, actually, I'll be honest. I think they're both easier. But
where are we heading now?
Next month, we are going out to a Grange property where they have constructed a like picnic pavilion without permits. And it's kind of an after the fact asking for, I'm going to go ahead and pause this. I'm going to operate under the belief that we are adjourned and I can pause the recording.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
So we're going out to Beaver Creek to look at an after-the-fact kind of permission or forgiveness, not permission, on a pavilion building, which has been there for, I don't know, 15 years. I hear you. The other one is a new construction home on a property where the previously existing historic home was lost in entirety. In the wildfires, and so that would, that's a tough one for a number of reasons, not the least of which there's not a lot of historic context left to reflect.
Wow,
because it was a total loss, and so
ashes to ashes, dust to dust.
So that's what we have in the docket right now. Barring any new emergences, we'll see.
Okay.
Anyways, thanks everyone for hanging in there. It was a really good discussion. I know we didn't necessarily come to an agreement on this, but it was a long meeting and I value everyone's ability to like hear each other and be forthright and like still get to the end of the meeting and be cool with each other. if I can be so colloquial. So, yes, thank you for your efforts. Look for more stuff from me in a couple weeks for the next meeting. Thanks, y'all.
Thank you. All right.
Good night.
Thank you.
Yep. Bye, y'all.